This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK11. And also by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 121, for the world is hollow and I have touched Spock's brain. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Drew Stewart. We'll be talking about Star Trek gift ideas for this holiday season, one of our favorite Dr. McCoy books, and some of Trek's best cliffhangers. Then in the feature, we're joined by 5-Year Mission for a preview of their upcoming album, Year 3, and 4 live acoustic performances. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Drew. It's great to have you with me on the Ready Room this week. I know you have been very busy with Standard Orbit. You guys, is Dave Rossi just moving into the show? Is that what's going on here?
He wants to. I mean, like, he's like, whenever you want me back on, can I be on? Can I be on? Can we stay? Can we do one more? No, it's like when he messaged me back, like, hey, you want to be on the show? Can I do two? Yeah, sure.
Sure. You want to be a regular co-host? Sure. No, it's great. I love that Dave is coming on the shows a lot and talking because he has just such great information. And
he's been around. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say he's been around for a while, but he's been involved in Star Trek in surprising ways for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I just love hearing all that behind the scenes stuff that went on there. I mean, that's one reason why we do Trek FM in the first place.
So. Well, on this week's show, he reveals that one of his first jobs was he was a production assistant on Sarek. And he actually, not on Sarek, on Unification. Uh-huh. And he brought Leonard Nimoy his lunch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was
so
it Plomeek soup?
Leonard, like, right at the beginning. That was the joke we made.
Of course, too easy, right? So what else is going on for you, Drew? I know Starbase Indy is coming up this weekend, but I hear you're not going this year.
Yeah, I'm not going. Larry was there last year. I'm not sure he's going to be there this year, but... We try to keep our cons limited, and we went to Gen Con to see 5-Year Mission, so there wasn't we didn't really want to go up to Indy for another convention.
Yeah.
So soon. I mean, that was only a couple months ago.
Well, I know that the band's going to be there, I believe, playing.
Yep.
But before that, they're going to be with us here today on the show in the future, so I'm looking forward to that.
I'm super excited.
But before we get to that, let's jump into our news. And really, our news today is going to be more of just a bit of discussion. And with the first one being, you know, Thanksgiving is coming up Thursday, the day after this show drops, which means that it's time for everyone in the U.S. anyway to jump into holiday gift buying mode. And as we do every year here on The Ready Room, we're going to talk about some possible gifts that might be really great for the Trekkie in your life. And StarTrek.com just put out their holiday gift guide, as they do every year. So we're going to talk about some of the things they had on their list. And the first one here is Star Trek email, Drew. And I don't know if you have Star Trek email or not, but there are a variety of addresses you could choose from. And which one of these would you want to choose?
Well, it looks like the options are varied between really good and way too long. And we've got Starfleet.com. USS Enterprise 1701.com, toboldlygo.com, and that's not a number two, though it should be, the-borg.net, and klingon.net. I like Starfleet.com. It's very short, very professional, very like, you know, university sounding. It should be Starfleet.edu.
Oh, I was going to say
Starfleet Academy.
I was going to say it should be Starfleet.org or Starfleet.mil.
Ooh.
But I don't think they can do that.
Depending on the academy. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they'd let that happen.
I think Starfleet.com is the gold standard of the options that you have here. That's a really nice email address to have. Now, what's interesting, I'm just guessing here, and I didn't talk to their tech guys, but if you get the USS Enterprise 1701.com address, what I'm wondering is when the mail server crashes, will you have to change your address to USS Enterprise 1701A.com?
Yes, if you delete your account and then reopen your account, you do get 1701A.
Okay, that makes sense. And eventually you get B, C, D, and E, because there's plenty of letters in the alphabet.
Won't be the last email address to bear the name Enterprise.
So that one is really, really long. And then, you know, the-borg.net, I just generally don't like addresses, URLs in general that have hyphens in them. So
yeah,
it's just confusing to people, you know, when you have to say there's a hyphen in there. Klingon.net is pretty good if you're a fan of Klingon. Although, you know, they have all these new domains coming out soon. There's going to be this onslaught. I don't know when they all actually take effect and you can purchase them, although I think that a few registrars already allow you to pre-order. It's like hundreds of new domains that are going to be coming out. They've really opened up the extensions. I think Klingon.warrior would be what I would go for.
Man, when they launch those domains, things are going to get so confusing.
It really is going to get confusing. Isn't
Klingon.warrior.com? No, no, no.
No, it's just .warrior.
Just Klingon.warrior.
That's a thing? Yeah, it is a thing. So is Klingon.bloodwine.
I'm sure we have that problem too. Trek.fm?
Yeah, a little bit.
Kind of sometimes.
Although, you know, if someone types trekfm.com in, they'll still end up at our website, so.
Ooh.
Because I've got my bases covered. That's right. That's right. So these emails, anyway, it could be a good gift. What they have is a gift voucher. So you can go and you can pay the fee, which is $15 per year, then give the gift voucher to someone. They go, they enter a code, and then they can choose the address that they want themselves, which is kind of nice.
And, oh, okay. That's nice.
Yeah. And it's your pretty standard email, unlimited email storage. And they have anti-spam, antivirus. They have strict anti-abuse policies, which is important. It looks like a really good service, and that's one option if you're looking to get a techie gift for someone.
It also says that you can get it. It comes with a dedicated customer support team. Do they wear red shirts? I mean, I want Starfleet's finest. If I've got to pay in $15 a year for Starfleet.com, I need the best engineers that money can buy, or money can't buy, because Starfleet doesn't use money.
Good point. Yeah. I think because of the anti-spam, antivirus policies and countermeasures that they have in place, the support team probably does wear red shirts, because some of them are going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It can get
and
rough.
And is Kirk allowed to go anywhere near any of these? Because I'm afraid that he'll talk the anti-spam or antivirus to death. This mail is logical. You must allow it through.
All right, so that's a techie gift. Now, if you want to go flip side, people who aren't techie, people who like to spend their time...
Sports?
Yeah, sports. Sports ball. It's a very, very small sports ball, known to some people as a golf ball. People who like to spend their time on the course but love Star Trek as well might be interested in this next collection here, Drew.
Yeah, it looks like we've got a whole original series, which I love that the original series is... like so well represented and so easy to shop for. Not necessarily golf things. Personally, I took golf in college. It didn't go well.
You took golf in college? It was like a course you went to and you...
It was a PE. It was one of the options for PE.
Okay.
And so I took it, and we just never really had any practices. And then our final was to play 18 holes. It took my friend and I all day. And if I had spent $10 on 3 red shirt golf balls, I would have immediately lost them and been very sad. But what we've got here are Star Trek golf balls, red, blue, and gold, with the different emblems on them. We've got golf club covers with red, blue, and gold.
Yep.
And we've got a divot tool, which I guess allows you to repair the ground.
Yeah, and that one's cool because it looks like the Enterprise.
Which is fantastic.
And don't worry, you know, the other golfers on the course, the people behind you who are tapping their foot because you're taking too long, you know, to put out the hole, don't worry, they're not going to laugh at all when you repair the course with your Enterprise divot tool.
They might laugh if you make the sound effects, though.
What, you go down, shoo, shoo, doo, doo, doo. Maybe. This is, yeah, it's an interesting set. It is a great gift for, you know, there are many, many Star Trek fans who also love to play golf. And so it's fun to have a themed set to take out there on the course with you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty nice. And it's from $9.95 for a set of 3 balls, all the way up to $69.99 for the bundle of products that we're talking about here with the covers and the balls and the divot tool. And so that's one thing. But, you know, after I play 18 holes of golf, I like to go home and relax and, you know, pick up a good book or go over to my dining room table and spread out some galactic maps. And that's what we'll get in Larry Nemechek's Stellar Cartography.
I have not seen this book yet. Like, I've not gone to the, I think it's still called Barnes & Noble, or as I call it, the showroom, where I can, you know, browse all the books and then buy them on Amazon.
Yeah.
But it has 10 huge maps. I haven't listened to Literary Treks 26 for the details either. So you might have to fill me in on how this works.
Yeah, well, you need to go listen to that, first of all, because Larry and I talk all the way through the book, and you'll really find out what's in here, the process behind making the book, which was excellent. And if you remember the old Star Charts book, your first inclination might be to think that Stellar Cartography is just an update to Star Charts, but actually it's a new book. They've gone in, they've updated all of the maps, but not just updated them. They've created these giant pull-out maps because this is not exactly a book. It's more like a clamshell, and there's a book component to it, but all the maps are individual maps, like you would get, you know, maps of the state or wherever it is that you're going to go, except here it's the different areas of the galaxy. And they're also printed on a type of paper that doesn't crease very easily. So when you unfold them, you could actually put them up on your wall and they're going to look great. They're not going to be creased like your old Rand McNally maps would be. So it's not exactly a book. It is this clamshell. It has detailed maps of a Romulan government map of the Empire, a Cardassian Union map from the time of Bajor's occupation. And of course, that episode of Literary Treks is called Cardassia is in the Caribbean, which is a title chosen by an analogy that Larry made, which you'll catch if you go listen. There's also a Klingon map. There's an ancient Vulcan map. Lots of really fascinating things here. And
it looks like each map is in the particular universe. Like, the Vulcan map is in Vulcan and looks Vulcan-y. It's not just like, here's the Cardassian map, you know, in the Starfleet font.
Right.
You know, this is the map of, it's like a Cardassian map of Cardassia.
That's right. Yeah.
Sounds really cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. They are presented mostly as if they are maps from that empire or that planet, or it's from their perspective. So that's quite cool. Now, you mentioned Barnes & Noble, and the thing about this is right now you can only get this through Amazon because it's published by 47 Really? North, which is an Amazon imprint. And get this, you're going to love this, Drew. Although the list price is $79.99, the pre-order price at Amazon is actually $47, $47.99.
47 North, $47.99.
Yeah.
I'm sensing a pattern here.
I'm thinking there are some Star Trek fans there at that publishing company. So this would be a really cool gift. I mean, this is the one thing on the list Yes. here that I think if you really have a diehard Trekkie on your shopping list, go get Larry's Stellar Cartography book, because this is something they're really, really going to love with those 10 original maps.
It looks like it would pair well with that that History of the Federation book that came out last
year. Right. Well, it's the same publisher. Exactly.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So
I don't have either of those, so if you're looking for something for me.
That's Drew's wish list. You heard it right here on the Ready Room. Now, this next one, tell me what you think about these, Drew. You've seen these posters that Juan Ortiz has been doing. He actually had a showing in, was it in LA, I think, just last week? I know Larry was there. He's been doing posters of all 80 episodes of the original series with a retro style, kind of a 60s movie poster look. They've also been putting these on t-shirts and shot glasses and all over the place that you can see this artwork. But what they've done here is they've put together a book. Titan Publishing has put together a book that actually collects all of the posters into a nice art book for $40. What do you think about this book and these posters?
I've been interested in the posters. I've not been able to settle on a particular poster, unfortunately, because there's some that are incredible and some that I'm not super fond of.
Yeah.
But to have a book that has really nice prints of all of them, I think it really helped me figure out which ones I need to hang on my wall.
It would be nice to look at them flipping through a book. Yeah, I'm like you. There are some of them which I think are really great, and there are some of them that I just really don't like at all.
Well, like in the example here that you posted, you know, we've got the Tholian web. It looks really cool. It's got, you know, Kirk glaring and, you know, like a web surrounding the Enterprise. But then there's the Savage Curtain, which is the Enterprise flying toward a giant Abraham Lincoln head.
Yeah, I'm not fond of that one. I mean, an example for me here, the Omega Glory, which is an episode that I don't actually like very much. But the poster is quite nice. I think that the poster captures the episode in a unique way. And I do like that one. So these posters are a mixed bag for me. But if you think about them in an art book, that's a nice collectible thing to browse through and see. The unique perspective. It's also easier to study the artwork, to kind of see what Juan is thinking when he develops it, if you can just hold it in your hand as a book, as opposed to having all the posters.
Do we know if it has like his explanations? Because when they put him up on quantum mechanics, he's got, you know, an explanation of what he was thinking when he did it. That might be interesting to have, you know, like on the page or on a opposite facing page.
Yeah, I believe I haven't seen the book itself, but I understand at the back of the book that there is an index and they have quotes and they do have Juan talking about his designs in there. So,
fantastic.
Of course, the posters themselves are full page, you know, as you flip through the book. But there does appear to be some commentary in there as well. So, yeah, that would be fantastic because, again, just like with DVD extras, that's what I'm most interested in things like this, is hearing from the creatives themselves and the process that goes on behind the scenes when they create their work. So
the book itself is only $39.95. I wonder how much it would cost to actually have Juan Ortiz come to your house and sit down and explain and read the book to you.
That sounds like a Kickstarter incentive, where like if you donate $10,000 to the project, this person will actually come to your house, sit down, have coffee with you, walk you through the process of the entire project. I like it. Yeah.
We'll have to consider that. We'll fly to your house.
All right. Well,
read the book to you.
Well, here's another unique one. We talked about this on the show back when it came out. This is the Starfleet Academy ring from QMX, which is a replica of the one that was used as a bomb in Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, I would like to point out to everyone that this replica does not explode. So don't worry about that. It's not a dangerous gift, but if you are into collectibles and want something that's kind of unique within Star Trek collectibles, you can get a replica of that ring.
I love replicas. I love screen accurate replicas, and QMX makes really great stuff. I've got their JJ-verse Delta Shield, and I've got their TNG Delta Shield on my ThinkGeek bag of holding. And they look incredible. And I don't know if I'd wear it. I am kind of disappointed that the Starfleet Academy ring doesn't come in the case that Khan gives
Mickey
from Doctor Who.
Yeah. No, it doesn't come in that case. It does come
with
in...
With magic blood? That would be so awesome.
The magic blood, it's kind of like the get out of jail free card, right? You just carry it around with you. If you ever become injured or terribly ill, then you can just pull out your screen accurate replica ring case. And just, you know, I don't know, you can't inject, may just lick the blood. Do you think that would work if you just licked it?
I'm sure. if you just like a Polar Pop kind of thing.
Just jab yourself with it?
No. Just drink a little bit.
Oh, one of those. Yeah. Okay. That might work. All right. But this does come in a leather case that has a single blue white LED light to spotlight the ring. So that's kind of interesting.
That does sound good. That sounds good. I think that's a good mix between having something screen accurate and being able to display it well.
Right. Yeah. And amazingly, this is only $29.95. Usually these replicas are quite a bit more than that. So that's a good economical gift that's unique as well. Now, Drew, this is something, the last thing that we'll talk about here is something that I really, really would love to have. This is Star Trek sleepwear. These are from the Robe Factory. They're pajamas. They're available as TOS and TNG uniform styles. And they look really comfortable. And I just, you know, because my studio is in my house, I feel like I should have some... I need to wear my uniform. I need to be in my command garb as I'm running the network. You know, I'm editing shows and such. But I want to be comfortable too, since I'm in my own home.
Yeah, these look incredible. It would be a waste to just wear it around the house. I mean, like, these look really good, as you know, and they're just pajamas. I would see 5-Year Mission wasted their money. They bought those in Novos, you know, 100% accurate uniforms. They could have just bought these pajamas. They would have been very comfortable on stage. I don't think it whisks away the sweat very efficiently, but yeah, it could work.
I'm just picturing the band on the stage at a con in pajamas. The thing is that, I mean, everyone says, whenever Starfleet officers go back in time, everyone says, I saw these strange people wearing pajamas. So, I mean, that in and of itself is screen accurate.
This is true. Maybe in real life they are more pajama-like than we'd like to imagine.
I think they are, especially those jumpsuits that they wore at the beginning of DS9 and they wore on Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
Those really look pajama-y to me. Is that a word?
Which, unfortunately, aren't included, or I might be able to convince my wife to buy matching pair.
Right, not yet. Also, the Empress Hoshi pajamas from Enterprise are not available at the moment either, but hopefully those will be coming soon, probably from Victoria's Secret. All right, so these are some gift ideas. Is there anything that's not on this list, Drew, that pops in your head that let's just say something that you as a Star Trek fan wish that someone would give you as a gift?
Well, my mother-in-law was kind enough to randomly buy things from my Amazon wish list, so I got Mark Cushman's These Are the Voyages last week for my birthday, and it is incredible. I've been reading it for a few hours now, off and on, and I barely even got past the cage being filmed. Like, he gives the history of everything. Like, I learned about Lucille Ball and where NBC came from.
Uh-huh.
Like, he goes into the minutiae, but it's very interesting and very well written, and I highly recommend it. I know that the digital version comes out soon, if not now.
I think this coming week.
So that's something. Mm. Yeah, so that's definitely something that you should pick up for you or a loved one, even if they don't like Star Trek.
Yeah. I'm going to grab
buy it for somebody.
Yeah. I'm going to grab the digital version because it's easier for me to get here. But let me ask you though, is that a book, you know, some books you want to have the printed book, just the way the book's put together. Is that one of these books where if you can get the printed one, that's the better way to go?
Well, like we had this discussion, you and I like when I've got a book, like a reference book, that I'm going to reference a lot, I like having the physical copy.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I like having a physical copy of. If it's like a picture book, like that art book we already talked about, or a book like this where I'm going to be like, I need to flip to this episode. I like having the physical book. And the font's very big. So it's not like you need, you know, if your eyes are bad, you need to zoom in or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of neat pictures that I don't know how well they'd translate to a digital version.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So, well, either way, whichever format you grab that in, again, I haven't read it yet, but Drew has. Sounds like a fantastic book. So if you have someone who likes to read on your list, yeah, I think that would be really great. Well, Drew, while we're talking about books, let's take a break from our news discussion here to talk about one of our sponsors, and this is audible.com. And Audible, as we talked about last week, is the premier source for audiobooks. They have more than 150,000 titles, which is just absolutely mind-blowing. If you think about just trying to listen to one, you know, read one book, listen to one book, and maybe one per week, and then you think about 150,000, and then you realize that even though audiobooks make it really easy for you to consume books a lot more quickly than you could if you had to just sit down and read, because you can listen while you're working, while you're exercising, while you're commuting, still 150,000, you really can only get through. You can only scratch the surface.
Yeah. And like most of them are, you know, it looks like the Star Trek books are average around like 4 hours or something. Mm-hmm. But I have a Stephen King book, 11/23/63, I think is what it's called. Uh-huh. And it's like 17 hours.
Yeah. Well, you know, the one that I just picked up the other day is this new book by Doris Kearns Goodwin called The Bully Pulpit, which is about Roosevelt and Taft and the golden age of journalism. This book is unabridged, just 40 hours.
Wow.
So there's some just really extensive content there. And you know, what's amazing to me, because I'm an Audible member, is that's 40 hours of fantastic content that I pick up just for one credit, because
that's awesome.
You know, as a member, I get 2 credits per month, and I just grab that book for 1 credit. So it's a great deal. Now, there are a lot of, as you said, a lot of Star Trek books on there. They have Prime Directive and Federation, which are two of my all-time favorite Star Trek books. And the book we want to talk about today, because our theme for this show is TOS with 5-year mission joining us soon, is Shadows on the Sun by Michael Jan Friedman. And this is a book that Matthew and I talked about on Literary Treks back in the summer. And this is a story of Dr. McCoy. As fans of Dr. McCoy know, he was once married. He's divorced. And in this story, he comes face to face on the Enterprise once again with his ex-wife, Jocelyn, 40 years after they split. And it's set against the background of a mission to the planet Sun, which is S-S-A-N. It's a sun. It's really fun to say, right? Sun.
Roll that S. Sun.
Makes me feel like the Jungle Book. So anyway, so McCoy's been to this planet before in the past, which is one reason that they want the Enterprise to go there. But when he gets there, he's not only faced with Jocelyn, but he's also faced with her new husband, because she and her new husband work together in the diplomatic corps for the Federation. And so they're there together on this mission. And so that's a really tough situation for McCoy. And he has to face a lot of the past choices in his relationship, but he also has to face some tough decisions about medical ethics as well, because what's going on in this planet is they have it's a tradition of assassination, basically. That's how the society works. It's how the political system works. But there are some issues there. There's a danger to the Federation as well. And so they're sent there on this mission. But it's really a Dr. McCoy story. So this diplomatic mission is going on in the background, but it's really focused on Dr. McCoy. And it's a really great book if you're a fan of Bones.
Cool. I thought that I had read it, and then you mentioned assassins, and I'm like, no, I don't remember that.
You may have read it a long time ago and kind of forgotten about that particular part of the story, because so much of the story is about Bones and Jocelyn. So it could be that, because, you know, I read it a long time ago, and then Matthew and I did it, as I said, on Literary Treks That's episode 21 of Literary Treks, by the way, if you want to go and listen to that. And so I went back and we both read it again to get ready for the show and kind of jogged our memory about things we had forgotten. But the audio version is narrated by James Doohan, who I have to say does a spot on Scotty.
Oh, I imagine. I was listening to some samples this morning to get an idea of the audiobook quality, and he does a pretty good Kirk too, I have to say.
Yeah, Shatner. Yeah, you can do a Shatner, right? If you're like, because James Doohan is really good at doing voices. You know, he does on the animated series. He does so many of the
every voice
characters. Yeah, so that's good. But if you want to try Shadows on the Sign or, you know, anything else, they have so many books at Audible, and you can get a free audiobook of your choice as a Trek FM listener just by going and trying Audible. So go over to audibletrial.com/trekfm and get that free trial, get that free audiobook. By doing that, you'll be helping us bring The Ready Room to you every week. And we really thank Audible for their support of The Ready Room and Trek FM. All right, Drew, let's go on. We have one more thing that we'll discuss today. And this was a poll on StarTrek.com. And I have been impressed, as I've been saying recently, that Voyager is not winning every single poll anymore. This one was your favorite cliffhanger. Now, this one was...
They kind of stacked the deck.
Right? This is a tough question to do as a poll because there are so many two-parters. There are so many things that you could view as cliffhangers. And they gave you a pre-selected group of episodes, 6 episodes to choose from. So there was no way to vote for something other than this. So what were the results, Drew? And what were the choices?
Well, the choices here, we had with 4% of the vote, we had Redemption, which is a Worf one, right?
Yeah.
And then at 8%, we had Chain of Command. At 9%, we got Equinox, the Voyager episode with the evil crew. At 12%, Time's Arrow with Mark Twain. 15%, you have Scorpion with the Borg, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at 52%, the cliffhanger that is the epitome of cliffhangers, the example that is given in cliffhanger school at the Writing Academy of everywhere in the world, the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Well, there's no way you can argue with the results of this poll. I don't think you can find anybody who would argue that the best of both worlds isn't the best cliffhanger in Star Trek, if not the best cliffhanger on television at any point, because it was so well done. It was so unexpected. I think the fact that it was the first cliffhanger in Star Trek helps a lot because you weren't expecting it. It's, you know, later on with so many of these, you became accustomed to the fact that they were going to do cliffhangers at the end of seasons. This one just caught you completely off guard. I remember where I was when I watched it. I remember watching the episode and when it said to be continued. And I was like, to be continued? What do you mean? And then I had to wait the entire summer, and there was no internet back then. And I had to wait the entire summer wondering what was going to happen. And the great thing about it is that if you look at something here like Equinox, which you and I were talking about in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
The thing about Equinox is that you knew that Captain Ransom and the Equinox crew, and that they weren't going to succeed in stealing warp coils from Voyager and leaving Voyager stranded because the series had to continue going on. And you knew Voyager wasn't going to do a story where they had to spend the rest of the season searching for some way to get the warp engines working again. So there was...
That would have been neat, but...
Well, it would have been neat, but they weren't going to do it. And so there was no... Like, there was no real sense of danger, or there was no question in your mind how it was going to turn out. Whereas with the best of both worlds, I mean, we really at the time thought that maybe Patrick Stewart was leaving the show. Maybe Riker was going to be the captain moving forward. It was a real legitimate possibility. And so it was just the perfect cliffhanger.
So do you think that StarTrek.com is now realizing that Voyager was winning so much that they're just throwing low balls to everything else? I don't know. Who's your favorite original series character? And things like that.
I don't know. I always joked on here that if they had asked that exact question that you just gave there, that they would have had a write-in option and Janeway would have won. So, I don't know.
Seven would have won. Don't kid yourself.
But the result here, indisputable, the best of both worlds, best cliffhanger. As for the others here, I was kind of disappointed in the choices that they gave because Scorpion was a good cliffhanger. I enjoyed Scorpion. Time Zero, I don't know. I like the story okay. I know a lot of fans don't like that episode. But as a cliffhanger, I mean, it didn't like really leave me concerned about what was going to happen.
Yeah. Is Data going to be stuck in the past with Mark Twain? Like, that's...
Right. Yeah, so...
Not really a cliffhanger.
It's not really a cliffhanger. Chain of Command is in the middle of a season, so... It's kind of like you only have to wait a week to find out what's going to happen. And again, you know that Jellicoe's not going to be the captain for the rest of the series. You know that Picard's going to be okay. So I don't know. The one that, and again, you were saying that you had a couple of ideas here as well. Why don't you tell me before I threw this out there, what's another thing that's not on the list that you would have put on there?
Well, I mean, just as an option, while The Best of Both Worlds has the best cliffhanger, my favorite two-parter is Year of Hell. And while the cliffhanger part, you know, with Janeway, because the episode, you know, halfway through the episode, she says, "I will never abandon ship. We will never launch these escape pods."
Yeah.
And then by the end of the first part, she's saying, "Launch all the escape pods and everybody leave." It's kind of heartbreaking, but it wasn't really... I mean, because you knew that the Year of Hell wasn't going to... I'm sure even when it came out, you were like, they're not going to skip ahead a whole year and, you know, destroy Voyager.
Yeah.
Well, I like the ending. I don't think it's a cliffhanger. So it's hard. It's hard. It's hard to top Best of Both Worlds.
Right. Yeah. When something comes in the middle of the season and you just wait 1 week and then you get the resolution, it is hard to really see it as a cliffhanger. Year of Hell is a great episode. I love the fact that they had foreshadowed these events in before and after, and then they came back to it, which was really excellent. And again, if they had abandoned ship and there were real consequences to what happened, and that had gone on for a season, which is actually something that they had considered doing at one point, that would have been fantastic. As it is, it's just a really good episode that has kind of a disappointing conclusion because everything's okay at the end. The one that I would throw out there is Call to Arms from DS9. It's the final episode of the fifth season of DS9. And in true fashion of DS9, you know, it's not a part one, part two, which I don't know, that might be why StarTrek.com didn't think about putting it on here because it wasn't a Call to Arms part one, Call to Arms part two. But like The Best of Both Worlds, because of the nature of Deep Space Nine and the way they told stories, especially here at the end of the fifth season, you really did wonder what was going on. I mean, they abandoned the station. Sisko's on the Defiant. There's this huge war coming. And the Defiant goes and they join the huge fleet. You've got the Federation, you've got the Klingons, and you don't really know what's going to happen. It's the start of the Dominion War, and then you have to wait all summer to find out what's going to happen. And beautifully, starting the sixth season, they didn't come back in the first episode and get the station back. You know, it took time. There was an arc there. And so I think it's a really, really excellent cliffhanger as well that I would probably put number two on my list here after The Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah, I like how Deep Space Nine doesn't do the part one, part two stuff, because that's kind of a spoiler watching it Netflix-wise now.
Yeah.
You know, because you'll see, oh, part one, part two, whatever. But like my most shocking cliffhanger was the first part of the Circle trilogy.
Yeah.
Because you know, I'm just like, how are they going to solve this? Okay.
No, they're not.
All right. We're going to keep going.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, they're going to solve it. Nope. Three-parter. Okay.
I know. Isn't that great? Yeah. So I love that.
I didn't expect that at all. I'm like, you've got my attention.
Yeah. So this was it's an interesting poll. It was a tough question to do as a poll again, because you really, it's more like a fill in the blank question and then a why. Like, which is your favorite and why? I think you can get better answers from people that way. But I'd be interested to hear what our listeners think about it. If you want to send us some messages and, you know, let us know, and then we can talk about that on a future episode of The Ready Room, what you think about the poll and which episodes in particular you like that weren't on the list here. So there we go. All right, Drew. Well, that's all we have in news today, and we're not going to do our five-year mission preview that we've been doing the last few weeks because the band is going to be joining us in just a few moments. But before we get to them, let's tell everyone about our sponsor for this week, Squarespace. Now, Squarespace is the web's best hosting and CMS. It makes it simple for you to create your own blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. And as I say every week, I really love Squarespace. I've been using them for, it's probably about 7 years now. Trek a Film is built on Squarespace, but even long before that, I used Squarespace for my personal website, for client websites, for my company website. And the reason is that Squarespace is just incredibly easy to use. You don't need any knowledge of programming to build a beautiful website with Squarespace. They have a fantastic system that lets you drag and drop content blocks onto the page, puts them into a beautiful grid for you, which also uses responsive design to make sure that it looks great on a desktop, on a tablet, on a mobile phone. And another thing I love about Squarespace, Drew, is that if you ever do encounter a problem, they have the best support team that you're going to find anywhere. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they also, they respond really, really quickly. And I've had a few things in the past, not really anything wrong with the platform, but just some questions about, you know, something that was going on. Wasn't working quite the way I wanted it to. And they get back to you so quickly. It's a matter of minutes. They have responded, like 2 minutes, wow, responded by email. And they stick with you all the way through the process to make sure that your problem gets solved. So really, really fantastic support that they have. And amazingly, you get the hosting, the CMS, and this fantastic support starting at just $8 per month. But I already mentioned responsive design, and there are a couple of other things that I love about Squarespace, Drew. And one of them is the fact that they're just very design focused. They really care about design.
Yeah, all of the designs that they have are really clean and easy. None of this, you know, no flashing text or any of that right, leftover 90s stuff. It's all, yeah, very clean, very simple, and you just put in your information and run with it.
Right, yeah. They're professionally designed templates, and one thing you hear sometimes is that no two Squarespace sites are alike, and that's because even though there are a collection of templates that you can start with, it's so, so easy to modify those designs and to make them your own, whether you want to change the fonts, whether you want to change the size of the type, the colors, change the header images, whether you have a sidebar on the left or the right, whatever you want to do. It's so easy to alter these things without any coding knowledge and really make the site uniquely yours. And so the design focus is really fantastic. Another thing that's really important, Drew, is promoting your content. Whether Definitely. It's a personal blog, whether it's a store, whatever it is that you are publishing online, you have to get that content out in front of people so they know that it's there. And of course, the way to do that these days is through social media. And it can be really, really time consuming to go to all the different social media outlets and manually promote your content. And what Squarespace has is something called connected accounts. And it's not the share thing that you think about on other sites where you see like a little bar with the icons and you can just click it to then share something that you like. This is actually a system that allows you to tie in your social media accounts so that your Squarespace site can promote content for you when you publish it. So, for example, on Twitter, it will actually tweet that out for you automatically. You don't have to do anything yourself. And also with Facebook, you can go into the interface on Facebook and you can share a page from your Squarespace site on your Facebook page as well. I mentioned responsive design, Drew, earlier, and this is really important because if you ever try to look at just a traditional website on, especially on a smartphone, but mm-hmm. even on a tablet, it can sometimes be really hard to read. And I don't yeah. know if you're like me, Drew, but like my eyesight is kind of going downhill now as I get older. Yet, but You don't have that problem yet, thank goodness. But so it can be hard to read. So I love the way that Squarespace reformats your content for any screen size and takes, like, instead of compressing body type into a small space, they'll just take your sidebar, flow it right up underneath the body. It makes it so easy to read the website.
In this day and age, it's almost irresponsible to not have something that looks good on mobile devices.
Right, yeah.
And if Squarespace can help you do that, I mean, and you don't have to do anything, right? Squarespace does all this behind the scenes. You make your site, and then they make it look good on mobile.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can't lose.
You can't lose, right? That's the real key, that it doesn't take any additional effort on your part. The one other thing that we should mention, Drew, is the commerce feature. And this started earlier this year. It has been a really fantastic way to create an online store and to sell items, which is really, in the past, could be difficult to set up. You know, I've set it up for clients. We've even set it up ourselves for our own company dealing with PayPal and having a corporate PayPal account. And it can be really, really complicated, very time-consuming to set up. What Squarespace has done is they have integrated Stripe, which is a very popular online payment platform, into the system. And so as a Squarespace customer, you get a 30-second merchant sign-up with instant approval, no paperwork to do, and it allows you to begin receiving money for purchases via direct deposit in just moments. You can process credit cards online. It handles your full tax and shipping rules by region. It's currently available in the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, the Netherlands, and Spain. And that list of countries is growing all the time, and it lets you sell both physical and digital products online. But Drew, the best way to find out how great Squarespace is, how easy it makes it for you to set up an online store or a personal website, a blog, share your artwork, share your music, you know, with the band today. If you had audio tracks, there's a great integrated audio player that you can drop right there on the page. The best way to find out how this works is to try it free for yourself, and you can do that free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. You have access to all the tools in Squarespace, and plans start at just $8 per month. Unlimited is $16, and the commerce plan is $24 per month. Plus, as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% by using offer code TREK11. So just go to squarespace.com right now and try it for free. And that helps us bring the Ready Room to you each week. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of Trek FM. This week, instead of our usual episode feature, we're going to do something a little bit different, and we are joined by one of our favorite bands, 5-Year Mission. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to have you back with us. I've been wanting to do this show for a long time, waiting for year 3 to come out, and now the drop date is almost here, and I'm really glad you guys could join us to talk about the album and how it came together. Why don't you guys all, since there are 3 of you here tonight, go ahead and introduce yourself to all the listeners.
I am Mike Rittenhouse.
Patrick O'Connor.
And Chris Spurgeon.
And I'm Noah Butler.
So if listeners want to pick you guys out on the album, now you all sing and you all play, but which songs on your 3 did each of you come up with? Because I know you guys divvy up the songs.
On year 3, this is Mike, I wrote Doomsday Machine and Cat's Paw and Wolf in the Fold and A Piece of the Action.
This is Patrick. I wrote The Changeling, which is the opener, and then iMud, The Deadly Years, and The Gamesters of Triskelion.
And this is Chris, and I wrote Mirror, Mirror, Metamorphosis, Friday's Child, and then
Tribbles.
The Tribbles, which is from the Tribbles EP. Mine's the one that's on the
album. You won.
I did win.
I voted for you.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you are responsible for the line, Scotty killed a hooker on the album. Yeah.
I laughed out loud this morning listening to that.
Boiler alert. Yes, yes, I am. And I can tell you there was some battling with other members to get that one on the album.
It was me.
Oh, yeah. Well, Mike, you may remember, I think I told all you guys when you were on the show for year two that listening to year two in the car, thanks to you, Mike, my children will yell, I'm going to kick his ass, kick his ass.
You're welcome.
Mike's a potty mouth.
I had your button that I got at Gen Con 2 years ago, the kick his ass button. And then I flew a bunch of different places in the last month, and it's gone. So somewhere, someone out there has an unlabeled button that just says, kick his ass, kick his ass.
They're better for it.
Well, a lot of our listeners are very, very familiar with you guys and have year one and year two. But I'm sure we have some listeners who aren't familiar with 5-Year Mission yet. So can you guys give a little bit of background about the band and how you met and how the band came together and how you came up with the idea in the first place to write songs for all the episodes of the original series?
You could probably just take this from a previous interview and just paste it in here.
It can be brief.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the questions we're always asked. I came up with the idea for this, and long story short, here we are. seriously, I've always loved Star Trek, a few years ago I became a bit obsessed with it and decided to combine that with my other passion, which is music. And then I stumbled across a few other guys that were into the same sort of thing, and it just kind of works.
Am I remembering correctly, Patrick? Did you want to have the Buffy the Vampire Slayer tribute band, or was that someone else?
Yeah, Mike originally had his original idea was to write a song for every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show.
And, oh, that was Mike's idea.
And he came to me with that, and I actually wrote 3 songs for it, and then nothing ever happened with it. And so we decided to try again.
I was tempted, one of the Kickstarter things where that you would write a song about whatever.
Yeah.
I was tempted to do it just to hear one of the Buffy songs. Just because I want to know what that would be like.
Yeah, we were hoping that would happen.
We were kind of hoping someone would pick that, but nobody did. So
yeah, we're all big Buffy fans too.
Just have to wait till the next Kickstarter.
I was going to do it so that you guys could write a song about the episode of Alf where he leaves the ants in the window and they all burn up.
Ah, I kill me!
We would have done it.
All right, so that's okay. That's how the band came together. Well, let's move on to year three, because this has been a while in the making. And share with us how this album came together, especially now you've done two already and we've talked about them on here before. Was there anything different about how this one came together? Did you have any new challenges, you know, as time goes by and life changes?
This one actually, after we finished year two, we draw for episodes. I think we used the Gorn mask this time.
Yeah.
Threw the episodes in the Gorn mask and drew them out of that. And we had already decided to do the Tribbles EP. And so the first two albums came within a year of each other. And then this one took 2 years because we did the Tribbles in between. So that made it a little different because we had more time to stew about the episodes that we had to do. Some of us more than others. Mike,
I literally wrote the words to a piece of the action the day before I recorded it, which was about 2 days before we sent the album off to be mastered.
Yeah, so we kind of shotgunned that one.
Yep. Most of the others have been written for a little while.
Yeah, the other ones, we just had a longer period of time. And of course, the Tribbles episode, which we did the EP for, we decided to put, you know, one of the songs we already had on the album. So just a couple different things for this album. I think it worked pretty well.
Yeah, it turned out very well. And what about now? You guys had a Kickstarter this time to, you know, help get the album mastered and pressed and all.
Right.
And I believe you didn't do a Kickstarter for year one or year two, did you?
No. I think for year one, it was kind of in the infancy of Kickstarter. It was before it really became what it is now.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah, we talked about it. And I think I actually, because you kind of have to get approved for it. And I think we actually sent some stuff, but it was not nearly as fleshed out as this one was. Right. And so it never really came to fruition. So
we've refined our process a lot at this point.
Well, and we were going into this. I mean, I was kind of gung-ho about it. You know, I'm like, look, we got to try this. I think it'll be really good. And, you know, we figured what have we got to lose? And so we put it all together, and I think we spent a lot of time putting together the project, and that really made a difference. And then we had all these contingency plans about, you know, if we didn't get the money. And so after a few days, we had the money, and we were very pleasantly surprised. So
that relieved.
And relieved. So that was another huge thing. You know, we were able to the first three albums I mastered, and I don't. I enjoyed doing the mastering, and it just tended to take a lot longer because we'd master some, then go back to mixing and kind of go back and forth. And this time we just kind of had to mix everything, and then it was out of our hands, which was good and bad because we couldn't go back and tweak things that an album is never finished, really.
Just only abandoned.
Yeah, right. For a musician. So right. That was something we just kind of had to adjust to. But I think it all worked out pretty well. Was there any other differences about this album that you guys can think of?
I think maybe for the first time, maybe we had sort of fan feedback of what they liked and didn't like from... I mean, I guess we had some of that on year two, but since we made them so close together and we already had a lot of the year two songs written when the year one songs came out. So I think this time we actually had more feedback about what people liked and didn't like and, you know... sort of, we weren't really making it as much in a vacuum as we were the first two albums.
Yeah. And you know, I think since we only had between year one and two, we only had 1 year of actual time. You know, people were excited about the second album, but for this album, it's, you know, the triples came out and we had seven songs on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, one of which was George Takei. And so it had been out for a while already. And the other one was kind of the second half of my Tribbles song. So, I mean, really you had five brand new songs on there. And then, we've been hearing for a long time, when's the year three going to come out? You know, people were getting really excited a lot earlier than they had been before. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot more anticipation for this album than one we've had yet.
It seems that way.
I think also another difference with this album is I think that we've kind of kicked back a little bit and had a little more fun.
Yeah,
I agree.
It seems like, you know, we're a little less of a workhorse now and more of just kind of enjoying what we're doing.
Yeah. I think we were very nervous originally because we didn't know how it would go over. You know, we didn't really have any expectations on the first one. We just made it. And we were, you know, relieved that people liked it. And so the second one, we kind of went for a more of an epic sort of overarching sound and style to it. I think this one kind of splits the difference between the two. Yeah, this one kind of splits the difference. It's got more of the fun, maybe, of the first one, but also some of the experimentation and you know, epicness of the second one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I'm curious, what kind of feedback did you get from people, both good and positive and negative feedback?
Just maybe songs that were people's favorites or that didn't really hit as well as we thought they might, that sort of thing.
We got a feel for what the fans react to better, as opposed to songs that just kind of are there. And
Well, I mean, I think one thing that we've experienced is we get on stage and these songs that play really well on the album don't play quite as well as we thought they would when we're playing to a live studio audience.
Medium, yeah.
So I think there was kind of this conscious effort in a lot of these songs to make them playable
on stage
live.
Yeah.
Whether some of them are better acoustic, some of them are better electric, but I think overall we've been looking to, you know, just be able to take the songs and translate them to a live setting so that we have more material that we can effectively play.
I feel bad for everybody else because, you know, living in Indiana, I get to see you guys live, and it's you guys put on such a good show. I mean, my wife is always excited. She's not a huge Star Trek fan, but she's always excited to come see you guys because you guys are just great musicians, and there's nothing like watching a bunch of people in Star Trek uniforms trading instruments between each song. Like, you never know who's going to have what instrument next, and it's never the same person with the same instrument at one point or the other.
Well, and we're trying to become smarter as far as that goes too, because
structuring our set lists.
Yeah, right. All the trading, we used to kind of try to spread out our songs. So, you know, I if we played three of my songs, we'd have one at the beginning, one in the middle, and one at the end. Now it's more like, okay, how many times do we have to trade instruments during a set? Let's try to make this a little easier. And maybe I'll have, you know, third song in, I'll play, and then fifth song in, I'll play. That if it means not having to switch as much. So we've gained a lot of experience just from doing, which is we've tried to translate that as much as we can.
The set lists flow a lot better that way.
Yeah.
If we group songs together where we're playing the same or similar instruments.
But then what's Fark going to do? I mean, he tells the jokes while you guys are trading off the instruments.
He finds plenty of space for that.
Well, let's talk about some of the songs and the inspirations that you had for the approach that you took with the lyrics and the approach that you took with the style of the songs. So, Patrick, what about the ones that you wrote? What inspired you?
Well, let's see. The Changeling was, I wanted something along the lines of Video Killed the Radio Star, which I think you can you can hear if you listen to it, the vocal effect that we put on it and the sort of Atari 2600 keyboard noises, all that sort of thing. Yeah. I think we captured that, but still have the rock coming in where it needs to come in. And it was a nice little departure to get people's attention for the beginning of the record. iMud, I wanted to do sort of a folky power pop song, sort of a Matthew Sweet style song with lots of harmonies and that sort of thing, but with more of a grungy chorus.
Also on year one, Patrick was a little disappointed that he did not get to do Mud's Women because I already had written a Mud's Women song when he joined the band. So I think this was his revenge.
My retribution.
Yeah. He wrote a much better song about Harry Mudd.
Let's see. Gamesters of Triskelion, I originally had seen as like a sort of a stick-style power ballad sort of thing, sort of a come sail away sort of song. It evolved quite a bit from that. It doesn't really sound like that, but I think it was a good way to get the ball rolling on it. And then the Deadly Years is kind of a 20s style little folk ditty with ukulele and all kinds of funny little instruments coming in and out of it. I think it's a really interesting recording.
Also has a little bit of barbershop to it.
Yeah, it's got some barbershop influence on it. And it's also got a little bit of a sequel feel to the Corbomite Maneuver from the first album. Since I wrote that one as well. And they mentioned Corbomite in the episode, The Deadly Years. So I wanted to make sure we fit that in.
And, well, and the line is there in the song, right, where you actually call back
to
your Corbomite Maneuver song.
Yes.
Which was really nice when I heard that.
Yeah, I really wanted something that had, you know, a little bit of everything thrown into it just for fun. Like you could listen to the recording and always hear new things coming in different spots. Sort of like one of the old sort of vaudeville style tracks that Queen did, you know, with the crazy production and kazoo solos and stuff. It's just people aren't having fun like that on their recordings like they used to. So that was that song.
What about yours, Chris?
Well, you probably already know about Tribbles. That was my Saturday morning cartoon effort. I just the whole, you know, Tribbles seemed so kid friendly to me that I just wanted to do something that I thought that if they were, they had a cartoon, that would be their theme song. Mirror, mirror. It's just kind of a, I mean, the whole idea is kind of a darker, kind of a darker theme. So I wanted to write something a little bit darker that was a little bit heavier and a little more melancholy, but still rocked. So that's where that came from. And I wanted, that one is just kind of a, it's not really a synopsis. It's just kind of an overall feel from the perspective of, you know, the captain and everybody who came over from the regular universe to the mirror universe. And then Metamorphosis has always been a favorite of mine episode wise. And I wanted to kind of do the, it's kind of a twist on a love song. It's these, and actually the first half of the song is written from the perspective of Zefram Cochran. And then the second half, thanks. I got a thumbs up from Mike for remembering that. And then the second half is written from the perspective of it's kind of the doctor companion. She's a doctor, right? And she becomes the one with the companion. And I'm a big fan of the Smoking Popes, and it didn't really end up sounding like a Smoking Popes song, but that was kind of the direction I was going. And once we mixed it with our sound, I was really happy with the way it sounded. And we actually went back and forth for a while as far as, you know, how fast to make it, because it, when I wrote it, it was pretty, it was kind of slow and very moody. And then I got in there and Andy started tearing through it and we were going really fast. And I think we kind of went in the middle and it worked out pretty well. And then Friday's Child, I wanted to do kind of the new folk, big sound. I kept saying to the guys, who was it? Oh yeah. Mumford and Sons. My wife, I like Mumford and Sons as well, but my wife is a huge fan and she was listening to them constantly at the time. And so I just kind of, that was kind of my inspiration, I guess. And it's, you know, if you listen to it, it's kind of that old, you know, just the story song. And then we have the, you know, kind of the big shouty ending. That's it.
Over to you, Mike.
Well, I definitely spent the most time and put the most effort and work into a piece of the action.
I thought you were going to say Wolf in the Fold.
I spent months and months refining the lyrics. Yeah. But actually, honestly,
the word is procrastinating. Yeah.
honestly, I actually like what I ended up coming up with for that quite a bit. Some of the lyrics I actually had for a while, but I had different music. But a piece of the action, as far as the music goes, especially the very end of the song. If you notice, there's a little part at the end where the instruments kind of take lead breaks. And that's definitely a musical homage to one of my favorite albums of all time, which is Motley Crue's first album, Too Fast for Love. And they have a song on the album called A Piece of the Action, and that's why I wanted to kind of make a little bit of an homage to that.
Well, A Piece of the Action and Cat's Paw are my two favorite Mike songs now. I think Cat's Paw is my favorite piece of the action. The second, although it's a close.
My
second.
Favorites are Doomsday Machine and Wolf in the Fold.
Of course, then.
My favorites are Shore Leave and
Arena,
and not Arena.
Enemy Within.
anyway, the one regret I have for A Piece of the Action is that I didn't get to make any reference in it to Mel's Diner. I really wanted to. I really wanted to throw Vic Tayback some love, but you know, yep. I didn't great. Get to fit it in.
I was you talking
get a,
about that
when donkeys fly in there somewhere. That would have been great.
Doomsday Machine. You know, very very punk influenced, of course. You know, I listen to a lot of punk, and especially No Effects. So there's probably a bit of No Effects in the song. I wrote it about his name's in the song, and I'm blanking on it. You're doing better than me on remembering stuff.
Decker.
Decker. Yep, that's right. It. Matt Decker.
What a ridiculous Decker. Character.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wrote it. I wrote it from his perspective.
Right.
And you know how he's kind of a bit misunderstood. I think. I mean, of course, he seems ridiculous to the audience with his bulging eyes and sweat. But I mean, you know, the guy has been through a lot, you know, and he's kind of he's holding it together pretty good, I think, for what he's been through.
And he flies into the windsock.
Yeah. but yeah, I wrote that from his perspective. Cat's Paw.
Awesome.
That one's actually, you know what, when you asked earlier about stuff about this album that's different than the previous ones, Cat's Paw is definitely a new method for us as far as writing goes. There was one practice where these two guys didn't make it, and it was just Andy and Noah and I. And we were just kind of jamming and making some stuff up, and that's where the music from Cat's Paw came from. We actually recorded like a rough demo of us just jamming.
The first demo, all the lyrics are Cat's Paw.
Yeah.
And then, so as far as the words go on that, I kind of wanted to talk about like Sylvia. And well, first of all, I wanted it to be kind of an emo sort of relationship song. And so I figured, you know, she's kind of toying with Kirk and what's his name? You mentioned him the other day.
Korob.
Yeah. And she's kind of toying with both of them. Like, obviously she's been, you know, hanging out with this guy, and now she's all like flirting with Kirk, trying to, you know, get him to do her bidding. And so I thought, you know, it'd be kind of a nice thing to write about this, you know, this evil woman, and from the two guys' perspective. So it kind of bounces back and forth between Kirk and him on as far as, you know, who's singing. And of course, I wanted to mention at the end how they just kill them and it's not even a big deal. Like, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, the Fraggles are dying. Let's leave.
Exactly. They turn into mini Fraggles.
Yeah.
And then Wolf in the Fold, it's my masterpiece, of course. it's a country ditty, you know. It's well thought out.
It's one of our White Album tracks.
When I first heard, when we first got the demo for Wolf in the Fold, we were all convinced that he was joking around. And I held on to that belief for months.
Yeah, I kept waiting for the actual song
for
to
the
show up.
Real song.
When I sent that demo out, it was actually a joke. I mean, I didn't intend on that to be the final song, but the more I listened to it, the more I liked it, and I decided to just keep it.
Translation: he got real lazy and didn't want to write another song.
It's artistic.
I've come to terms with it. It's okay.
I think my favorite part about that song, though, is that the entire song takes place during the teaser. I mean,
before the titles.
Yeah. There's nothing about the rest of the episode. It just ends with the end of the teaser, and
spoiler.
I kind of like that. So that's it.
I had a question about the songwriting process. Listening to the songs,
sure.
Do some of you consciously avoid mentioning the name of the episode? Because I feel like sometimes, like a couple of you may shy away from doing that.
Maybe it's conscious now. I don't think originally it was. I think we've observed it of each other, and so it's become more conscious.
Chris almost always mentions the episode, and it's almost always in the chorus.
No, wait a minute.
I have noticed that.
What was that? There was some song on the first album.
The Naked Time's the only one on the first album that you didn't mention.
How could you not mention that? It just rolls off the tongue.
Dagger of the Mind. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you made up for it in Dagger
of the Mind. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, I constantly get chastised for that. So you'll notice in Friday's Child, it's never directly mentioned. And in Mirror, 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 I don't actually – because, I mean, how do you write a song that says Mirror, Mirror and make it sound –
Not like mirror on the wall.
There's no way to do it. So I just, you know.
You say, I'm the man in the mirror, mirror.
Well, and on Friday's Child, I didn't. They never really, they never ever make reference to
the word Friday.
To the like, reference. What does you that know? Mean? Well, there's a poem, and in the poem it says, Friday's Child, it's at the end of the song. It's loving and Friday's Child is loving and giving. So that's what that was. That's the one reference to the word, to the title of the episode, where at the end it says, talks about how, you know, the new Tair will be loving and giving. So that's where that came from. So that's that's my most obscure title reference. You're welcome.
To break it down, I think we said that Chris always includes, pretty much always includes the episode title. I almost always do.
Noah almost never does.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Noah and I almost never do. Yeah, I think he has maybe two songs that do. I think I Sure Want to Leave is maybe the closest.
That was a good one, yeah.
That may be the closest I come to it, except on – I've got another one now that does it, right, that mentions
Doomsday.
Well,
it doesn't say Machine.
Well, right. Some songs or some titles lend themselves really well.
Catspaw says Catspaw.
Yeah. Catspaw.
Some titles lend themselves really well to being within the lyrics, and some just don't at all. Like Metamorphosis. Noah wanted me to take out some of those Metamorphoses.
No, I think that's the hook of the song.
But yeah, Metamorphosis.
Yeah, Metamorphosis.
Really got to have that.
I ended up leaving them in. And it was just, I mean, that was the point. I mean, that's like, yeah, the hook of the song. That's the point of the song. So right. in this case, it was perfect for it.
It kind of reminded us of City on the Edge of Forever when we got that demo from you. The chorus just said City on the Edge of Forever over and over. And we're like, you got to put something else in there, man.
Which it was better for it. And I actually wrote other lyrics for Metamorphosis for the chorus that we didn't end up using because we just didn't like them as much.
Yeah.
And yeah, City on the Edge of Forever was one where I totally, you know, I wrote it and I'm just like, I don't know what to say here. So I just repeated City on the Edge of Forever. And when the guys heard it, they, you know, they pretty much,
we sat him down and we said, we don't want to offend you, Chris.
Well, they solidified what I was already thinking is, you know, maybe I should not say this as many times.
Well, here's a challenge for you coming up. Write "For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky" without ever saying that in the song.
Ah, man.
No. The challenge should be that chorus somehow.
That's the chorus. I think you could work that out.
There's at least three of us in this room that want to write that song.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I was going to put the name of the episode in the song.
He's just saying that so
you know
him write it.
See, you should challenge each of us differently. You should challenge Chris to not do it, but challenge me to do it.
That'll be the EP, just so it's the longest titled EP ever.
On year four, I will make an effort to not put the title in any of the songs.
We'll see.
Yeah,
that'll all right. Well, it's really interesting to hear, you know, how you decide to approach the songs. Can we get you guys to do a few acoustic performances for us?
Sure. No.
Okay.
Mike's refusing.
Oh, so, maybe.
Since Mike's the boss. Sure.
Yes, we'll do it.
Patrick, I was actually thinking, because of the way that the final cut of Gamesters of Triskelion turned out to be a bit faster, I actually thought that song would be very interesting as an acoustic.
Oh, well, yeah, we can do that.
Good thing we practiced that.
We can definitely do that.
Are you going to stand up?
I don't know.
All right, I'm going to try this.
Oh, come on.
I'll do it way over here, so it's hard to even.
There's a lot of changes.
Oh, I thought you were going to do that for...
Are we sitting or standing?
I'm not going to bother playing. Cause...
Oh, no, you should play. All right. Definitely play. Maybe I'll sit. All
right. I'm going to attempt to play the accordion on this.
Yeah, we got an accordion in the room. We'll see how that works.
Which has never happened before. All right. Are we ready?
We'll see.
All right, here we go. Gamesters of Triskelion.
I'm coming until...
Right.
Plucked from across the universe. Hurry, check off Captain Kirk. Enslaved to do battle for sport. Gladiatorial combat for their gambling captors. Yes, they're gambling captors.
Good. Yay. I like that as acoustic. That works really well.
Thanks.
Drew, what, you have a request?
Well, I don't want to put too much on Patrick. I really like iMud.
Yeah, we can do iMud.
Oh, okay. I can't get it out of my head since I heard it at Gen Con. I mean, iMud is my favorite episode of Star Trek.
It's just so much fun, you know?
And when you guys were just like, we're going to sing iMud, and I was like, I hope that it's as beautiful as it can be. And it was better. It's so better.
You know, that was one I really wanted to do something about all the silly stuff that the Enterprise crew does in the episode. But when I was writing it, that's why I wanted the song originally. And then when I was writing it, it just seemed so much like it should be about the Mud character and his strange relationship
with Stella that would drive him so far away to do what he did. Because I don't know, whenever I think of that episode, I always think of that scene at the end that I don't want to spoil for anybody out there, the one person out there that hasn't seen it. All right. Let's try iMud.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
One, two, three, four. Behind every man's a woman urging him on to greater things. So was with my wife Stella, urged me into outer space. With her constant and eternal, infernal, confounded begging, I carried her memory with me as I fled from her away. I love you, however, I hate you forever. I love you, however, I hate you whatever. Stella would say, what have you been up to? Have you been drinking again? Lazy, good for nothing. I demand to know where you've been.
Harcourt,
Fenton, Mud, you miserable son.
Harcourt,
Fenton, Mud, the first of planet Mud.
Thank you so much.
Very good.
Thanks.
It still gives me chills. Ooh.
On stage, would you have the line, functioning as human females, do you all do the Chekhov okay sign to the audience?
That's a good idea.
That's something we should
you
add.
I don't
have
know to.
If I can do that while playing bass.
That's the problem, playing our instruments at the same time.
That's right.
I don't know.
You're just a break there, just one beat where you can all do that.
Yeah, Noah's not doing anything on that one. We could have him do it.
It's not like his part's that intricate. Actually, that's probably his most intricate keyboard part.
Chris, the song of yours that I really wanted to hear, which is currently I think my favorite song on the album, is Metamorphosis.
Okay, we can do that one.
Stand.
Yeah.
Okay. See, they're switching instruments. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Just positions, really.
You guys can't see it, but we've done it between every song so far.
We're also exchanging clothing.
We lied about that that camera issue so they wouldn't see us doing that.
I'm not ashamed.
What key is this in?
It starts on
there it is.
D.
Got it.
Or, no, it starts on A. A.
A.
A, yeah.
We know these songs well.
Yeah. I've played this one enough.
This is one of the ones we know the best.
We practiced this earlier and I forgot most of the words, so we'll see. All right. We'll play it a little faster than we did earlier.
Yeah, go ahead.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Now
Very good. Now, what was the name of that song again?
That was called Catchpaw.
That's Freddy's Child.
Metamorphosis. And we played the demo
that
version.
That was excellent. I really like that song.
Yeah, because
I did the...
Oh, right. Huh?
Yeah, I did that one twice. Yeah, I forgot the words. I forgot the words, but I think I recovered.
I think it sounded good.
It does. Sounded great.
I forgot the words, so that extended pause, that was me remembering the words. And then I was okay.
Oh, it sounded great.
Thanks.
So if we can get you guys to do just one more, Drew, can you pick a song of Mike's?
Doomsday Machine?
Oh, boy.
Or if that's too hard, Wolf in the Fold.
All right, you decide which one you want. I'll do either one.
Okay, Doomsday.
All right.
You play guitar on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just... Well,
we did not rehearse this one, so good luck.
You realize you're going to have to play the breakdown.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll play it.
Okay. Doomsday Machine.
Take one.
Yeah, take one. We may have to do this one twice. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
What? You didn't do the opening part that you always do.
Oh, yeah. All right. Doomsday, take two. Stronger with you than without you. by Galileo too. Stronger with you than without you. Goodbye, Matt Decker. Goodbye, Galileo too. Stronger with you than without you.
All right, that was great. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for those performances.
Sure.
So we love, I know Drew and I both loving your three. And what can you guys tell us about your four? Do you have any plans for that?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Well,
zero.
I think it's actually going to be 2 years from now before we put out year four.
Should we reveal anything about the interim? Well,
I think so. We've told enough people that it doesn't really matter.
We put it on the Kickstarter campaign.
Our next project before we do year four will actually be a Spock's Brain EP, similar to the Tribbles EP that we put out.
Yeah, we figured we did
the episode. The most famous episode. Now we're going to do the most infamous episode.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
to show our love of all Star Trek, not just the popular episodes, but all of it.
Yeah, we
love
gonna,
hurts, baby.
We're all five going to write a song for this one as well.
Excellent.
We're not sure what the bonus tracks are going to be yet, if any, who knows. And then we're going to do it a little differently than we did with Tribbles. We're not going to do a voting this time. Well, should we reveal anything?
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't think it hurts.
Okay.
Might as well.
Well, our present idea is that we'll all five write a song for Spock's Brain, and then whoever draws Spock's Brain for year four will write another song. So there will actually be six songs for Spock's Brain. Because you can't get enough Spock's Brain. I watched it today.
Gracious.
And I know. Yeah. We're gonna try to make this episode watchable again.
I've heard from some of our fans that we've done that for Charlie X.
Charlie X.
Yeah. I never had a problem with Charlie X, but I've heard that.
Oh, well.
Spock's Brain is just so much fun. We did it here on the Ready Room a while back, and I think my conclusion to it was that, yes, it's bad, but it's so bad it's good. Mm-hmm. So I think it is a popular episode, even though it's famously bad.
Mike and I were actually discussing it tonight, since I just watched it again today, and my thought about it is that the whole brain extraction would have been really good if it was more, you know, like metaphoric than actually extracting his physical brain, you know, or like they extracted his consciousness or something, or like his intelligence. But no, they took his brain, and then after the surgery to put it back in, his hair was perfect.
But they did that in, they do that in, I think, Return to Tomorrow.
Yeah, but this
but it's the 23rd century. You know, plastic surgery is like a 5-minute job, you know? How do they do?
Actually, you know, the whole thing where Bones is, you know, hovering over, you know, sweat pouring from his brow. I actually like
into
that. You know, it's
Spock's
like
brain.
It's cool because he got all this information and then he had to finish it without it. And okay, attaching the vocal cords was a little, you know, all right, whatever. But still, I don't hate the episode. I think overall it's really, the concept is goofy, but I mean it's not a bad it's not the worst episode. Put it that way.
I just hope that one of the choruses is brain and brain. What is brain?
I've already written mine.
Patrick's written his. Mike's written his. Well,
I've got most of mine done.
And I have a conceptual idea as far as subject matter.
Louis has a conceptual idea.
Mine should be stupid.
They should all be stupid, Chris.
No, but I think mine actually might be stupid.
I think Noah said he's already got his written. Actually, Andy and Noah both mentioned that they have ideas already.
So we all have
mine's
ideas.
Been written for months.
And to speak on year four, we've discussed it a lot of you know, we kind of have an idea of some of the songs that we're hoping we get. We have discussed some things, and actually, can we talk about this yet?
Sure. At Starbase?
So at Starbase, this is, again, this is the present plan, but Starbase Indy is our release show next weekend. And what we're probably going to do on Saturday is have a live draw. So we've never done that before. We always kind of in the privacy of Noah's house or wherever we are, we draw for the next episodes. And I think we're going to do that publicly and, you know, maybe get some people involved in it. We'll see what happens. Patrick shaking
his head.
That's cool.
I wanted to ask you then, which episodes are you hoping to get? So, Mike, which episodes are you hoping you're going to draw for year four?
Well, of course, I was hoping for The World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. Aside from that one, I kind of hope that, you know, if I don't get that one, the episode right before it, I believe, is Day of the Dove. And if I don't get For the World is Hollow, I hope I get Day of the Dove because I have plans for that if I get it. I don't want to reveal anything yet. But I think it'll be fun for a lot of people. But other than that, let's see. There was one other one. My absolute least favorite episode of Star Trek, I think, is the Omega Glory. But not because it's a bad episode. I mean, it has its moments. Which it is. You know, it's not a great episode. my problem with it is that they find this planet that developed exactly like Earth, all the way up to the point that they had a United States, and then they veered off differently, and they never explain any reason why this planet could have developed so similarly to Earth. I mean, I could understand an alternate reality or time travel or. Or even something like what's the name of the Nazi episode?
Patterns of Force.
Patterns of Force, like something like that. You know, where, you know, they're influenced by Earth in some way or whatever. But no, it's just a planet that is exactly like Earth. You know, and that just bugs me. So if I get that episode,
aren't there a lot of episodes like that?
Kinda.
Don't most of the planets they go to look suspiciously like Southern California?
But they do. They come up with better reasons.
If I get Omega Glory,
let's not forget Miri.
Yeah. Well, you see, that, and Miri, when they show that planet on the screen, and there is you know, there's North America right there. Like, really?
So if Mike gets this episode, the whole song's going to be a rant.
Kind of, yeah.
This episode, I hate it so much. Yeah.
I have plans for it if I get the Omega Glory, and it's not going to be really all that flattering. So apologies to fans of the Omega Glory in advance.
Fan of Omega Glory.
Yeah. Patrick, what about you? What are you hoping to draw?
I'm hoping to draw For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. If not that one, Day of the Dove. And I actually have an idea for the Omega Glory that I'm hoping to work on. I'm hoping for the Enterprise Incident because that's always been one of my faves. And we've been rewatching them lately and I really enjoyed it. So that's kind of my choice as one of the better later series episodes that I'd like to write for. I have an idea for it. And I actually already sort of wrote a little bit of an idea for the infamous episode that I thought I would write, which is Assignment Earth. So I've got those are kind of the good one and the bad one that I'm sort of wanting to write. not bad per se, but
I could see some good ideas with Assignment Earth.
Yeah, kind of there's a lot you can do with
60s
that.
60s spy, maybe like a Bond movie.
Yep, exactly. That's kind of what I was thinking. What else? I had some ideas for Return to Tomorrow and I can't think of the name of the other one right now. The one where everyone is turned into little cubes. By Any Other Name.
By Any Other Name with the guys from the Andromeda Galaxy.
Yeah. Right, yeah. But Enterprise Incident and Assignment Earth, probably.
Very good.
Let's see. I want For the World is Hollow as well. We're going to have four different versions of that one. I think Noah's the only one that doesn't care about that episode.
Yeah, we should go deep for that also. All right, new plan. Year four is going to come out 3 years from now. Next year, you're going to get a Spock's Brain EP.
We could just do the Spock's Brain slash.
Oh, longest title for the album. Spock's brain / For the World is Hollow. You know, yada yada.
For the World is Hollow, and I have touched Spock's brain.
Yes. Yeah, and we each write a song for those too.
For Spock's head is hollow.
You know what? If that happens, you heard it here first. Just so you know. I also, let's see. Actually, Patterns of Force would be kind of interesting because, I mean, you know, who doesn't want to write a song about Nazis? That is a Nazi one, right?
Yep. Yeah. That's it.
It is.
Spectre of the Gun would be kind of fun because it's got the most ridiculous Doc Holliday I've ever seen. Doc Holliday was in it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, all the Earps were pretty ridiculous too. They were all angry. It's the angry Earp episode. And then Paradise Syndrome. I would like to have that one with Kirok. That'd be fun.
I am Kirok.
That would be the chorus.
It writes itself.
Yeah, it does. So yeah, those are mine.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to seeing what you guys do with all those episodes. For now, like you said, this coming weekend, Starbase Indy, the official launch of Year 3. If people want to get their hands on Year 3, especially people who aren't going to be at Starbase Indy, where can people go to get the album? What formats is it available in? And is there anything, any special merchandise, anything like that surrounding the album?
We will have the album available to order from our website, which is 5yearmission.net. Very soon it will be added to our online store. And that would be the easiest way to get a physical copy. Digitally, it will be available in all the places that all of our other albums have been available. iTunes and Amazon, you know, pretty much all of the places you can get music online. As far as merchandise goes, we're going to have a few other things to go along with this album like we've had for the other ones. We've got some stickers on the way, and we're going to have buttons and stuff like that, just like with our other ones. Nothing like the Tribbles like we had for Tribbles. You know, I'm not going to spend hours gluing fur on this album like I did with Tribbles.
That's so awesome.
Nothing special like that.
You must have gotten one of the ones that the fur didn't fall off of.
No, it's amazing. I every day I look at it, I'm like, I'm impressed that the fur's not falling off this thing.
So are we.
Oh, also we have Starbase Indy is our all ages release show, but we also have a 21 plus release show on December 7th here in Indianapolis at the Melody Inn. So we'll be doing three release shows, I guess, if you count both Starbase Indy performances.
Yeah.
Great. And beyond that, do you guys have any shows on the schedule?
February, we're playing February 8th in Lafayette at a place called the Lafayette Brewing Company. And we have some other things coming up that we're still finalizing.
Yeah, we actually, we have a potential kind of a big show in March. We don't really want to say anything yet because it hasn't been, we've been told we're doing it. But we haven't signed any contracts yet. So we don't want to reveal it yet, but as soon as we know, they're trying to get some details together. They don't know exactly the date. So we're just kind of waiting. We're in a holding pattern, but hopefully we'll be able to announce it sometime before the end of the year.
That sounds great. So I'm going to go right now book my tickets to Lafayette because 5-Year Mission live performances and a brewery together is about the best combination I could think of.
It's a very nice, very nice venue.
Very good. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us today. Please send our best to Andy and Noah. We're sorry they couldn't join us tonight, but
we're not.
You guys,
you guys. What do you mean? We've been here the whole time.
Yeah, I wanted to say stuff, and they kept pushing me out of the way.
Cartoon Noah. And Andy.
All right. So thanks again, and I hope you guys have a great show at Starbase Indy this weekend.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having us.
Man, 5-Year Mission is so much fun. Like, I've been looking forward to this since I realized that it's something that we could do.
Right. Yeah, I know you don't co-host the Ready Room very often, even though, of course, you come on for all the TOS episodes. But when I lined things up with Mike and we knew which weekend the band was going to come on the show, I immediately asked you, do you want to co-host this show? And you're like, yes, yes, I do. Absolutely.
Yes, I love those guys. It's so great to be that close that I can go to their concerts. And it's great for everybody else that you can buy their music. I'm excited for everybody to listen to year three. The live stuff was really cool, but their album stuff is great. So be on the lookout for that. I'm sure we'll tweet about it once it's up.
Yeah, I'm also excited for everyone to hear year three. I've had the album for about 2 weeks now, maybe 3 weeks. And it has already shot up on my Last FM account to the very top, like my most played album of the month, which it's been a while since that's been dislodged. And year three just shot right up there. So everyone is going to love this album. But you know, Drew, this isn't the only thing that's been going on the network this week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Talking Spock with Dave Rossi.
But now you add in the wild card for this one character that one of the most emotional races in the universe, human beings, is half of what he is.
Earl Grey.
TNG Introductions.
Well, because I think Data's Day was actually the one I was thinking of, so since that one's already taken, I might come in at this
one. No, I'll just erase
angle.
Everything that Daniel said.
And just no, go.
Daniel,
no.
The first time we have a guest. Really? God.
Favoritism!
No. You one-upped her.
The Ready Room.
The Squire of Gothos.
Nobody has that much power. They must have some kind of transporter matter reshaper device. And it must be over there because he's hanging out by it. You know, it's a small room. What do you expect him to, like, I'm going to dance over here by the salt vampire. I don't know.
The orb.
The minion invasion tactics.
And Bashir says, look, I know what the orders say, but he attacked Chief O'Brien and we have rules against that sort of thing here. So I think that they're trying to figure out, yes, the Federation has rules, but how much are they willing to bend the rules depending on how we push their buttons?
To the journey!
Dealing with the end of Voyager.
I've recorded these on tape, and they were all kind of out of order, and so I had my own shuffle, where I would just...
Nice.
I would just put in a random tape, and I would get an episode from season 2, season 6, and then season 3, you know, and it was just really cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Just a grab bag.
Yeah, it really was, and so that was my way of coping, was just spending time with my friends. Warp 5.
Season 1, Highs and Lows.
He's talking about, it's more of a satiny one.
Okay.
Pretty plain with the piping over the shoulders in the three colors.
Yeah.
No, that's a
good pick. I ordered it, but they sent me to Paul's cat suit instead, and it doesn't really fit.
I know, it didn't really hug your curves in the right places, did it?
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Harlan Ellison's Soldier.
It's like Mr. Belvedere, if Mr. Belvedere had really severe PTSD from a war in the future.
It's like Small Wonder, but with a Klingon instead of a little girl.
It's like Alf, if Alf killed tons of people.
Literary Treks.
David Mack, A Ceremony of Losses.
And then we color-coded it, and we started lining up dates and events and saying, well, this book runs from this date to this date. These events in this book happen on these dates. So that if you're writing this scene in book 2, you know that it happens exactly, let's say, 11 days after this event in book 1. And that sort of meticulous, down to the, you know, fine detail, granular planning became absolutely essential.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them in a variety of places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox Zune, or you can stream or download from the website. And you'll find links to everything on the site at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory. Drew, let's tell everyone where to contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on Five-Year Mission, on anything we talked about in news today, especially what's your favorite cliffhanger? We'd like to know what that is. Just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the ready room, and that'll come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, and you can also go to our forums at trek.fm/forums to talk to us and other listeners about anything on the show or anything Star Trek. And also, I'd like to remind everyone about questions from the fleet. If you have anything about Star Trek that you would like us to discuss here on the Ready Room, any questions, go to that same page, trek.fm/contact. There's an option on the forum for questions from the fleet. Choose that, send us your questions, and we will answer them and discuss them here on the Ready Room. If you're looking for us on social media, you'll find us in a few places. You'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, and you'll find us tweeting away all the time on Twitter under username Trek FM. Now, Drew, when you're not listening to iMud on loop over and over and over and over, where can people find you?
Dead. While I'm listening to iMud on loop forever and ever, you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, where I'm tweeting about iMud and how I'm listening to it repeatedly. You can also find me on here on the network on Standard Orbit, where I co-host with Mike Schindler, and we talk TOS, and we've got cool guests. We've got some more guests coming up pretty soon. We've got commentary coming out. It's gonna be fun. It's already fun, and you should be listening if you're not.
You have to listen. It's the will of Landrew.
It is the will of Landrew. Which is me.
That's right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username and on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then on the network, I'm not on Standard Orbit with you, Drew, but I am on the Orb with Matthew Rushing, where we talk about Deep Space Nine every week. Matthew and I also do Literary Treks together, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics. And this week, we have a great interview with David Mack about A Ceremony of Losses, his book in the Fall series, which is the third book, or as David called it, Hump Book. And that's out there right now, which you can find. You can also find me every week on Warp 5, where we talk about Enterprise. And I have my own interview show as well called Matterstream, where I talk to actors and writers and scientists and all sorts of other people about topics loosely related to Star Trek. So you can find that on the network as well.
You're almost to the point where we can just list what shows you're not on and it would take less time.
Maybe. Although we have 15 shows now, so I'm only on a few of them, as it turns out. It's amazing how we've grown. But Drew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you once again to please support our sponsors who make it possible for us to bring the Ready Room to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website portfolio, or an online store with the incredible commerce feature. Create your own space today. Go to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial and then use offer code TREK11 to save 10% and choose the annual plan, and you can get a free custom domain registration as well. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of the Ready Room and the network. And also audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books that you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. 150,000 titles are available, including some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, and of course, the one that we talked about in news today, Shadows on the Sun. So give it a try today. Catch up on all the books you want to read. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up to get a free audiobook of your choice and a trial. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank Audible for their support of the Ready Room and Trek FM as well. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep the Ready Room going, and that's by adopting some aliens, at least some illustrations of aliens. Drew's giving me a face right now, like, aliens have to move in with me?
No, wait. Alf.
Now that would be fun, just hide the cats. No, these are illustrations of aliens by Tobu Ushi, who does most of the great artwork that you see on our website, and we have them available as badges and art prints. You can mix and match, choose which aliens you want in which format. There are different levels of contributions that you can choose from as well. And your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the Ready Room and all of our other shows to you each week. So you'll find those over at trek.fm/donate. And we really thank you for your support of the network and helping us keep all the shows coming to you. All right, Drew. Well, it has been a great Ready Room. I am so glad that Five-Year Mission was on with us. And now I'm sad that we're probably going to have to wait 2 years to do this again for year four.
Yeah, maybe we'll have him on about the "For the World is Hollow, Spock's Brain." For Spock's head is hollow and I've touched his brain.
I hope so. And that reminds me, that's what I'm going to do right now. I'm going to wander off and see if I can find Spock's brain.
Well, it's time to stick a cat's paw in it, because the Ready Room is done.